Hey, everybody. Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. And my name is Vlad Sedler. Today is Thursday, February the 13th in the evening. And I'm here with a night owl because it's the East Coast his time. You might be listening to this at any time of the day. But Jason Anthony is out sick. There is a lot of influenza and crazy stuff going on here. Probably not just in California and everywhere. But because Jason is out, we have the pleasure today of my colleague at FTN at Bronx Yankees 23 on X. His name is Mike Mager. Mike, what's up, bud?
How's it going, Vlad? We're getting closer.
I know. The news is coming in hot and heavy. Pitchers and catchers are here. All the little tidbits and injuries that mean so much to us. It's a wild time right now.
Yeah. No, and I think one of the things I really like is we're transitioning from a lot of guesswork by reporters trying to kind of fill space into getting some actual news, something, you know, stuff that's usable for us fantasy players.
Yes. And it goes down to all levels. It goes down to, looking at the Jared Triolos of the world. So those of us have been playing the draft champions for so long. I mean, you know, we're starting to get some guidance for possibly our gems in those last 10 rounds.
Yep. And at the same time, we're starting to hear about injuries that we'd have no way of knowing about that may make us regret some of our picks for the last 4 months.
Yeah, I've been talking about I'm afraid to look at some of my early gladiators from November, December, because I just have so much of Kirby Yates and Blake Treinen and, not too much Porter Hodge or Luke Weaver, but just Carlos Estevez and Urseg and just anyone, Estevez is supposed to close, but just like anyone that looked like they were going to have a job and now don't. And then, of course, I have no Kenley Jansen. Jason Anthony's been scooping up all the Kenley.
Yeah, a lot of movement in the closer ranks over the last month or so. The only good thing is I think it's going to continue. So maybe some of those guys will do better than you think.
Well, so at this point, there is really only Kyle Finnegan and David Robertson available as far as guys who could potentially close. But even then, that's not a guarantee. Like I was thinking about it earlier today, if, say, Kyle Finnegan signed with the Marlins, he would most likely be the closer. It sounds like Miami's just going to go with those guys, Calvin Faucher. Give him a chance to start. To close. And then, I would be worried for my Chris Martin shares if David Robertson signs there, because I think he would have an opportunity to close if he went there.
Oh, I agree. No, I would think he'd be the closer. He was next in line to Yates last year and has a much more experience than Martin in terms of closing out games. So I would expect Robertson to be the closer. And you could still squint and see a number of spots where he could close. Like in addition to Texas, you could see Washington maybe, ponying up for him. Detroit probably could use like a regular, capital C closer. It's tough. I'm not sure what Texas is doing. I keep waiting for them to sign a full-time closer, but they're not going to, I guess.
That would be nice. I am a Chris Martin fan. He does not have a lot of closing experience per se, but he has I think the lowest walk rate of all relievers and maybe even pitchers just over the last five seasons when he's healthy.
Yeah, no, he's a skilled pitcher and he had a good season last year. I'm just surprised. I think he's like 37, 38 with, under 20 career saves. I think four or five might be his season high in saves. And I don't know, this is a team that, won the World Series 2 years ago, wants to get back there, have invested heavily in, Semi and Seager, DeGrom, et cetera. It's just a little surprising that they wouldn't, that they would let Yates, Robertson, and Leclerc leave the team. And Chris Martin is the answer. But we'll see. Maybe something's in the works.
And of course, we don't want to go down this rabbit hole too much, but there was a report I saw today about Robert Garcia, I guess, is dealing with minor forearm irritation, and it sounds like it's not a big deal, but even something like that could spark some type of David Robertson signing.
Yep, it could. I mean, I guess with the Dodgers, you know, when they signed Scott and Yates, you're wondering what Yates too, but then you hear that Phillips is a little slow and someone else is missing the first.
Kopech.
Kopech, yeah. So now you find out, you know, kind of motivation behind certain moves that got made.
So let's go over some of these recent moves, but we just touched on it, so might as well stick there with Kenley Jansen coming back to California, not with the Dodgers, obviously, and he is, 31 saves out of fourth place all time behind Lee Smith, and so he, we were told that Ben Joyce was going to be the closer, and now this happened, and I mean, stinks for our Ben Joyce shares, but what is your feel on Kenley Jansen? Do you think he belongs more in the 140s, 150s, David Bednar, Alexis Diaz range, or closer to the Jeff Hoffman, around 100 range?
I think he's still a little bit back for two reasons. One, I think there has been a decline in skills. I mean, he had a decent year last year. I think he could still get the job done, but he doesn't have like the same level of skills as I think a Hoffman does if healthy. And the second thing is durability. I mean, Kenley has had some issues in the past. You know, is he going to pitch the whole season? He's been, you know, pitching like 45, 55 innings the last couple of years. He hasn't been a, you know, a full season guy. So I would put him more in the back. Guys like Bednar who, you know, I think it's clear it's clear the role is his. It's a safe job as closer, but there's some questions about the skills.
Yeah, and we actually have a little bit more clarity about the Dodgers' job, obviously, with Evan Phillips still dealing with an injury, Kopech likely to start on the IL, and the word from Dave Roberts is that Tanner Scott and Blake Treinen would get the most difficult outs. Obviously, did not mention Kirby Yates, but it's looking a little better for you know those that invested in Tanner Scott. We're kind of seeing him go somewhere around the eighth, you know, between the seventh and ninth round of 15 teamers. And I don't know. I remember I asked you a couple weeks ago when I was in a DC, I just didn't feel very comfortable taking him there. It was like at 150 in the 10th round. But now, what is it, a week and a half later, it's feeling just a little better.
Yeah, I think actually that's going to be a bargain by the time we get to main events. I think he's not going to get all the saves, but, you know, on that team, even three quarters of the saves puts him in a pretty high up the closer rankings, considering the strikeouts and ratios. What I found really surprising with the news was, given the incredible season Yates had last year, that he wouldn't be mentioned like that, that they're kind of elevating Treinen to next in line. Although Treinen also had a fantastic season last year. I was digging into Treinen a little bit the other day, and I was reminded that, like, his 2018 season was one of the most amazing runs for a closer for Oakland. So Treinen also has tremendous skills. And, you know, he might be undervalued right now. People are still, you know, finding him in DCs in the, you know, 400s. I would jump on that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think a lot of those guys, like even Luke Weaver, even though it's very clear that Devin Williams is the clear closer there, you just never know. You just have somebody there in Weaver that just would be an instant pickup. Jason and I, you know, kind of discussed it a little bit last week. Same thing, Lucas Urseg. I mean, he shouldn't fall, you know, crazy. I mean, he's no longer a top 100 guy, but he shouldn't be outside the top 300, for example, because he's still really good and could take that role if Estevez falters, and that's always very possible. And then same with Porter Hodge. I don't necessarily believe Ryan Pressly is all that solid. So there's a lot of value in those kind of 300s, 400s with some of these relievers.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a good strategy. I understand it's tough for drafters when you get into that range. You know, you're trying to complete your starting lineup. You want to get, you know, your offensive backups at all the positions. The sixth outfielder is really important. You know, you want to get an extra corner infielder, middle infielder, and starting pitching is starting to get a little shaky. So you want to get a couple extra starters before the good ones run out. But having that extra reliever that, you're confident in that can get you really good ratios, who also has a shot at some saves, I think is really valuable. I mean, there's just so many weeks, especially in DCs, where you have bad matchups or starting pitcher injuries, and having, you know, someone like Weaver who can get you 4 or 5 strikeouts in a week with good ratios is very valuable.
I think it's crazy that there are people out there that want to get rid of saves in NFBC. Like, what would we be talking about these last few weeks? It's where all the fun is.
That's right. Yeah, we would frustrate the hell out of us. Yeah, without saves.
Wins, and by the way, yeah. What's that?
Wins would, but
yeah. Yeah, win, save, such a pain. By the way, really awesome news on the FTN front that Dan Thompson, who came aboard a few weeks ago with us and put out some incredible content with his State of the Steel series, that, you know, Target's column, the second one is just incredible. The first one sets it up really well. But, you know, great news is that Dan is going to be managing our everything bullpen related. And so, now he has sort of taken over the bullpen report that I manage, and honestly couldn't have, you know, I mean, the great thing is I could hand that over to you or Lucas Beery or, you know, whoever on the team. And I just, it's, you know, feel very confident with it, but he's almost like, you know, I'm looking at this, what he's putting in there and how on it he is. And it's like, man, this is, you know, this is an upgrade actually. And then additionally, he's managing our new tool that just came out, which is the Filth Relievers on the Rise. So that just came out, a very kind of novel idea here. And because we have our pitch arsenal metric, filth, that is, you know, essentially like a WRC plus, with the 100 being the baseline, and you know, we have that grade in there along with KBB percentage, and we have, you know, it could be sorted by ADP for all relievers after 200. So all these Cole Sands and Gregory Santoses of the world, we have a little bit more color all in one place without having to dig into it. So props to Dan on the work there.
Oh yeah. No, I looked at it the other day, and it's fantastic. And what a great tool for folks drafting now, especially in draft champions leagues, or, you know, the 50 rounders, when you get done with the established closers and you're trying to figure out which relievers to spec on, that's just an awesome tool.
Yeah, we've got a lot of really great things coming up and already in action. Mike just wrote about the 15-team DC that him and I and a couple of our league mates, Lucas and Jake Kuchek, and who else was in that? And Dan.
Yeah.
We're all in that league. And we had 10 FTN subscribers, so we were all in that league together, and it was a heck of a draft. Mike wrote up the draft from his perspective. We've got the 12-team draft grid sheet backed by popular demand. That is back and live. I'm going to continue to update that. Projections and rankings keep getting updated as well as the underdog rankings. And the FTN draft guide at ftnfantasy.com. Our current deal, if you are not yet in, it's Spring 15, S-P-R-I-N-G 15. Gets you 15% off. It's the best content around, and we've got 3 NFBC overall champions on the team, and that's not including me. I am not one of those. Lots of top 3, top 5 finishes, but I am not one of the 3 like you, Dan, and Lucas, who won a DC.
You will get there. I am confident of that.
All right, let's jump into a little bit of this recent news we started to touch on. The big one here. Did it hit you by surprise at all? Hit us with a ton of bricks. Alex Bregman to the Boston Red Sox. Let's break that one down.
Yeah, no, I mean, I knew that was a possibility. You know, at first the dollar surprised me. All the news was he had a 6-year offer, was looking long term, wasn't considering short term, and then to hear he got a 3-year, $120 million contract. Surprised by the shorter term. I guess there's opt-outs every year. Surprised by the $40 million a year AAV. Although I subsequently heard that there's a lot of deferred money, so it's apparently it's like a $30 million a year value. But it's definitely just 30. It definitely lengthens what's already a really good lineup. And now it's, you know, everyone's trying to figure out how the pieces are going to fit and what the ramifications are. And, you know, I guess there's a considerable chatter about Bregman playing second base. And I guess that's the current plan. Certainly hurts Grissom and Hamilton, I believe. And it may also really hurt Christian Campbell. Although I did look into it a little more, and he played all over the place last year. He was in the outfield for 20, 30 games as well. So maybe he still has a shot, but it's probably a tougher road for him to make the team coming out of spring training now.
Yeah. What's that?
Do you see it any differently?
No. I mean, that's it. I mean, I'm realizing that there's just so many times where Alex Bregman was sitting there and I just did not really consider it. I think maybe it was just like the fact that I need steals at that point or looking at pitchers, but he was never really part of the equation for me. And yeah, I hate to be that guy that just is, all of a sudden I'm all about it. But part of the reason is because of the ballpark factor. I mean, especially, Todd Zola mentioned in a response to one of my tweets on Wednesday night is, his sort of like pull happy approach that he's sort of trending towards that could really work out well. But in the FTN VDP model, I had Bregman there for about 650 plate appearances, but neutral, like no park. And this is before kind of made some adjustments, but there's also like an automatic adjustment in the model, like based on the park factors in our own sort of little proprietary mix is built in there, but it is based on the park factors. And so let's just saying he was like a $12 base value in 15 teamers. Listen, he might be a $15 guy, but just saying 12. When I moved him down, when I just populated him for the Tigers, he dropped down to $11. When I put him to the Astros, he went up just 20 cents from that $12. But when on Boston, he went up to $14.20, which is like a 13% increase or whatever. So that's good. And then, he's going to hit third or second and like a loaded lineup and possibly get second base eligibility. I mean, he's no longer a 150 overall-ish guy. I mean, he's got a lot more interesting now.
Oh, yes, for sure. And you're not alone. I mean, I have one share, I think, so far, but he was not a particular target of mine. Part of it was a concern that given his, pull tendencies, but he's not like – he doesn't have huge power. It's just he's really good at pulling it. Houston was like a perfect field for him, and most other places would have been a downgrade, especially if he did go to Detroit, who was very interested in him. He's going to probably one of the best parks he could go to. And then when you tack on second base eligibility on top of that, second base is, it's a very deep position, but it's lacking star power. And so when you look at the second baseman available, he's pretty high up the rankings, I would think.
How much is there a way to quantify the value of having second base? Like if you say had him, like do you have him at like say one, I'll have to throw out the exact number, but if you had him at 125 in as a third base only, would he be like one or two rounds of value in addition if he was second? Like does he come close to that Vientos, Caminero range of third baseman?
For me, probably a little bit short of that. I'm not sure I'd move on quite that far, but I could see definitely a round or so improvement. I think there's a lot of value, assuming he is going to be the regular second baseman to start the season. I think there's a lot of value getting second and third as opposed to like first and third, because now he covers corner and middle. It just gives you so much flexibility, especially in a DC league or even a fab league with a short bench. It's pretty valuable. So plus also I do think second base is weak up top, and so that gives him an additional value, because there's not, I think I'd still have Kettle Marte obviously, and I think Albies and Altuve ahead of him, but after that you can almost squint and Matt McClain, he could almost say he's fourth, fifth, top ranked second baseman if he's going to definitely get eligibility there.
Yeah. And no matter the position he plays, if he is locked into hitting third or second, I mean, you know, a healthy season from Bregman, and you're looking at, like, you know, 85 plus runs and 85 plus RBI. Who knows the, you know, the mix of that, 20 to 25 home runs, you know, just a couple of stolen bases, and maybe even the average goes up a little bit because he's been kind of down there the last couple of years. He used to be a good average hitter. But you know, the most interesting thing from all this is, you know, how, especially, you know, all of us drafters need to be careful, but I think especially somebody that is working within projections like I am, to not jump the gun, to make sure I'm doing, to not try to be fast or first, because no one's really racing to make changes. But to make sure I'm careful about it, because as soon as that, you know, you read something, oh, second base, and you kind of go down that rabbit hole, all of a sudden now I'm reading, oh, you know, this could impact Rafael Devers. Because they, you know, basically the note was that even though the deal isn't official yet, it'll be, you know, soon. And even though the easiest path is for Bregman to play second, there's, you know, chatter that, you know, maybe it's best to deploy him at third and then have Devers be at first or, you know, DH, because also he's, you know, shoulder issues and some other stuff. But I'm thinking, like, first of all, I'm worried about all the, there's always some sort of chatter on Rafael Devers that it just doesn't feel good or right. And then also, I mean, I feel like one of Cassis, Tristan Cassis, Yoshida, like, someone's going to get moved. I feel like they themselves don't know what they want to do, Boston. They're just adding all these players, and then they're going to just figure it out later.
Yeah, I mean, too much depth is not too bad a problem. But, yeah, it does feel like a trade is coming. Another move is coming. And I think you make a great point. I mean, someone may say there may be news reports he's going to play second base, but, you know, we haven't seen it yet. The spring training games haven't started. You know, Bregman's been playing third base his whole career. Do we even know that he's going to be a really good second baseman? I mean, he could be, you know, terrible out there. At the same time, I think it's pretty clear Bregman's a defensive upgrade over Devers at third.
Mm-hmm.
But then do we know Devers can play first base? I mean, do we even know that, you know, he'd be viable there? And then you have the issue of, well, you know, do you make your best and highest paid player at DH? And, you know, what if he doesn't like that? So, yeah, there's a lot of things still uncertain. There definitely was a lot of chatter about possibly trading Casas, maybe for some more starting pitching. You know, who knows? Dylan Cease is still out there. Maybe the Mariners are still looking for a big bat. I'm sure they would love to unload Yoshida in his contract right now, but I'm not sure they're going to find any takers unless they're willing to pay it down by a sizable amount.
Yeah, and there's also the downfall impact of the other guys where, and this just kind of adds to this whole chaos that is the Boston Red Sox, is you alluded to it, the guys later down in ADP, where a week ago the conversation was, oh, it's a competition for second base between this stud rookie Christian Campbell, who's everyone's been pushing up now, going like 220, 250 overall, and then Von Grissom, who apparently has put on like 20 pounds and he's looking good. And then, you know, David Hamilton can kind of play everywhere, more of a platoon bat, but he stole, you know, a whole bunch of bases last year.
Yeah. Oops.
It's bad. It's really bad for Christian Campbell. All of a sudden he turns into a negative value. I, you know, am nowhere near comfortable drafting him in the top, you know, 350, 400. 'Cause I don't know, you know, how the playing time is going to shake out. It's such a risk. And then forget about it with guys like Grissom. You know, they'll get their playing time eventually somehow, some way, but it's hard to bank on it now.
Yeah, no, this seems like a very tough lineup to crack right now for someone without major league experience, especially someone like Campbell, who sped through the minors last year. It's not difficult to see them deciding he needs to get more seasoning in AAA to start the season.
A couple other players we'll talk about today is our corner infielders, first baseman and third baseman tiers episode. So Mike and I will run through the tiers, give you a good glance of how we are evaluating these players. But just a couple other quick notes here. The Padres making moves. Say goodbye to Matt Waldron and possibly Randy Vasquez from the rotation. Take away those innings pitched because Nick Pivetta is in town. A bit of an odd deal there. Very back end loaded. Obviously, we know the issues with the Padres and the Seidlers, sort of succession battle, as Jeff Erickson calls it. So Nick Pivetta really makes it a fine looking rotation. And then they added Kyle Hart, last year's basically Cy Young winner of the KBO. So obviously it's not called the Cy Young there, but he put up extraordinary numbers. Obviously it's not a strong of a league, to even put it lightly compared to MLB, but he had a 2.69 ERA, a 1.03 whip, and 182 strikeouts with only 38 walks and 157 innings. We've seen some guys transition well back over, Miles Mikolas and some others. Well, not Mikolas anymore these days, but Eric Fetty, some others. But Kyle Hart, Nick Pivetta in the mix. Are you interested at all in Hart in DCs? And do you think he makes the rotation? He's in on a one-year, $1 million deal. And then Nick Pivetta, is he back in your good graces?
Yes, I would be interested in Pivetta now, certainly at his current ADP, maybe even a little higher. He had a very solid year last year with a lot of improvement, even though, kind of the ERA didn't really show it. But I like this move for San Diego. I mean, it shows they still want to be competitive, even on a now more limited budget. I would throw a dart on Hart in a DC. Honestly, I haven't dug into him yet, but I don't like the alternatives there. Randy Vasquez hasn't shown me anything. Waldron looked okay for part of the season and might still have some viability as a fifth starter, but certainly there's an opening for Hart, and it's a good team in a good home park. So certainly, something worth gambling on if the pick is late enough.
So I just looked something up because I was curious, because I know Pivetta has had a high strikeout rate the last few seasons. So I just wanted to see where he's been. So I just looked up since 2022, so the last three seasons, starting pitchers that are qualified and their strikeout rates. So Nick Pivetta is 15th on that list. And guess what? The two other guys are, also in the top 15. So there are what? I'll tell you how many. There are only 106 that qualify over those three seasons, but Pivetta is 15th. Dylan Cease is sixth with a 29% rate, and Michael King is fourth, 29.1. That's a pretty good murderer's row there.
Yeah, no, I mean, Pivetta certainly can strike out batters. He was kind of homer prone a little bit, especially in Boston, but so I think he's going to like the move to San Diego. One of the things I really liked also was his control took a big jump up last season. And after years of just horrible whips, the last two years it's been 1.12 and 1.13. He's got over a 22% strikeout minus walk percentage. So, yeah, I think there's definitely reasons to like him. And I think, folks who were maybe fading him, given that he was unsigned, probably will be very happy to jump back in.
Yeah, very, very nice there for Pivetta. I think, man, he just, as soon as I popped him in San Diego, just like the valuation shot up and, the ratios went down. So, yeah, it's really good for him. Anything else? I mean, there's some other interesting stuff, but a lot going on with the Orioles, for example. Tomoyuki Sugano delayed by visa issues. Another closer thing with Felix Bautista. I don't think anything there is really all that shocking, but are you at all concerned about Felix Bautista? Are you like, I know we kind of liked him more than the market a couple months ago, but like, they say he'll be ready. He's just getting a slower start to spring, but it's got to be a little concerning.
Yeah, without question, you'd prefer him to be, on the same time schedule as all the other pitchers. I think I worry about it less with the reliever. I mean, he shouldn't need that much time to build up to pitch one inning a night. So, I mean, I'm willing to give it a little time, but, you know, 2-3 weeks from now, if he's not, you know, getting into spring training games, I'm getting concerned.
All right. Corner infielders, the tiers. So in the first round, basically the tier one is we've got them as basically we've grouped all the first and second round guys. I even have a kind of borderline third round guy. At least we're talking 15 teamers here, pop into that mix as well. But the very clear number one is Jose Ramirez. He has, for whatever reason, I don't know what it is, but he had been going, I feel like, seventh or eighth on average. Nothing has really changed. And now his ADP is like four or five. We've been seeing him go ahead of Ellie in many cases, or, you know, really just locked into that five spot. I don't know what's changed, really. What we do know is, as far as baseball is concerned, and, you know, one thing that I pulled out in my tiers article was his incredible consistency. So since 2017, many moons ago, he is basically top 2, 3, 6 overall in every major category. You know, sixth in plate appearances, second in ribbies, third in stolen bases, sixth in homers, fifth in runs. His season average since then, like if we exclude COVID, it's 655 plate appearances, 99 runs, 101 ribbies, 32 homers, and 27 steals. That's consistent since 2017. That's worth the price of admission.
It certainly is. Yeah, no, I mean, he's a fun player to watch. I mean, there's a lot of reasons you can talk yourself out of maybe having him where he should be. You know, he's getting a little older. The team context around him isn't great. He doesn't sometimes look like a stud athlete, but boy, just watch him play and he's fantastic. And last year, I mean, he's in his 30s, and last year he goes 39-41, 39 homers, 41 steals. So, I mean, there's no decline there. He rarely strikes out. Durable as anything. It looks like over 150 games over that every year this decade. Just a tremendous player. Mm-hmm. A safer pick, I think, than many.
You know, I have no shares. It's almost embarrassing, maybe, but, you know, 18 Gladiators, 11 DCs. And so, yeah, it's funny. I'll probably end up with him in like a main event, and then this will be his downfall year. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Is basically your, you know, 12 teamers. He's a solid second round guy. I think, you know, there's a case to be made that you can take him at the turn in a 12 teamer just because how consistent and efficient he is. But, you know, he has an ADP of 15, you know, hit what, 320 plus last year. I think only Bobby Witt had a higher batting average than him, and he's phenomenal. He's got a little bit more support in the lineup with Anthony Santander there. Hopefully Bo Bichette is rocking and rolling, George Springer. So the top half of the lineup looks decent. You got Freddie, and then, you know, a few picks later, or maybe like half a round later, it's Freddie Freeman and then Bryce Harper. And Freddie Freeman has been also, like, with Jose Ramirez, one of the most consistent guys in baseball. He's still in that top third of the lineup with Otani and Mookie Betts. Obviously, the you know, the off-season little surgery, so he slipped a little bit. And then, of course, Bryce Harper, who, man, he's tough. It kind of feels like he's become like that boring guy. You're like, okay, I'll take Harper, just because he's always kind of missing games here and there. But his batting average over the last few seasons has been incredible. Like, he's just the total package when he's healthy.
Yeah, no, I mean, he could be a five-category guy. I tend to not gravitate towards Harper. I think I have one share, but he always seems to kind of disappoint a little bit, either miss time or I'm not sure, as he's now, you know, he's 32, whether the bags are still going to be there. You know, the last time he had 100 ribbies was 2019. He had 101 runs in 2021, but so like the last 3 years, he hasn't even hit 90 in terms of runs or ribbies. But he will give you a very good average, which is a very scarce category. So that should not be overlooked. And of course, if he's healthy, it's a great park, great lineup. You know, he's certainly capable of putting up monster numbers. It's just he has not done so in several years.
And then what are your thoughts on Guerrero and Freddie Freeman?
Guerrero, I think, is a clear first rounder. I think right now in today's game, the number of hitters you could say that have a good chance to hit 300 are few and far between, and Guerrero is one of them. And he gives you power and average. He's extremely durable, so I think there's a safe floor. And as you mentioned, I think Toronto's lineup around him should be a little better. I'm very comfortable with him in the back half of the first round. Freeman, I think he's still really good. Another great average guy. He chips and steals. You can't beat the lineup context. I am a little worried he's getting up there in age, and now, you know, he's having some issues. He sounds like he's a little bit behind. I think I want to see him out there before I draft him again, just in case it's something bigger than they're letting on. But, you know, as a Yankees fan, I certainly recall him looking mighty fine in the World Series. So I think the skills are still there.
Yeah, and then there's wrapping up that first tier is Jazz Chisholm Jr., who is third base and outfield eligible. Obviously, you know, I feel like, you know, after last season and just his, you know, his sort of his history, I think people are always a little bit cautious. But I saw a little, maybe it's just, you know, maybe it's my this year's Yelich, lens is on, but you just feel like he had a little bit more purpose, a little bit more sparkle. Like, imagine spending your whole career in a place like Miami, there, and then you come to this lineup and you go to the World Series, you get a taste, and he's a competitive guy. He's really good, and you just want more of that. And the lineup around him is so great. I know that there's there's a little bit of risk, but it doesn't really matter where he hits. If you're hitting with Jazz and say Bellinger's healthy and, you know, Judge and everybody's, you know, rocking and rolling, I mean, he's a part of that. So how do you feel about him?
Yeah, I think he's fantastic. I mean, he may have had a bit of a reputation when he was with Miami coming over to the Yankees, but he fit in really nicely last year. Nothing but positive reports. Everything I heard was he loved playing for the Yankees. I think, you know, the excitement, the filled stadiums, being in the pennant race, having games matter was such a big change for him. And he really took to it. He does not mind the big stage. And, you know, the batting average is not as high as, you know, some of the other guys being drafted around him or above him. But, you know, to be able to get, you know, maybe 25 homers and upwards of, you know, maybe 35 to 40 stolen bases, potentially from your third baseman in fantasy is just tremendous. People should monitor things with the Yankees, but as of right now, I think there's a good chance he opens up as their second baseman. Mm-hmm. So in addition to third base and outfield eligibility, I think there's a good chance he could gain second base eligibility early in the season, unless they add another piece.
Yeah, you know what I'm going to try to do. It's probably a long shot, but I have some friends connections. Maybe I can get Jazz on the show. I probably should have asked in the off season. Now is probably a tough time, but also, why is he going to want to talk fantasy? But he seems like he's very naturally talented and gifted at baseball. Where I feel like also if he starts to work on a certain part of his game, I don't think, for example, his power ceiling is capped. I know it may sound silly, but maybe he comes, you know, a little bit more jacked in the off season. And what's to say that, that home run stolen base split kind of shifts. Maybe he's more like a 30-30 guy, right, as opposed to maybe a 25-40. So we'll see.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great point. I mean, maybe the biggest knock on him was durability, but he did play in 147 games last year, so maybe he's getting beyond that. And he had 24 homers last year, but only played half the season with the Yankees. And so a full season with home games in Yankee Stadium, it's you don't have to squint hard to see him getting to 30 with the short right field porch.
Yeah, and I think he'll be very streaky, too. I think that's just part of the nature of his game. But when he's hot, he's going to be really up there. Austin Riley is somebody who typically would go in the next tier. Our next tier, basically, I can kind of mention it now. It's Manny Machado, Matt Olson, and Rafael Devers. Like, those guys go together pretty well. They're all somewhere around, $20, $23 in value in 15 teamers. They all have so Olson and Devers' ADPs have slipped a little bit. There was a time a couple months ago where, Devers was going around 30th overall. I think that's fallen a little bit. But Austin Riley, I have a little above that group. And actually, Riley, I think, and Machado are pretty close. But he is healthy. He broke his wrist in August. And, he was not rushed back, so he wasn't on the playoff roster. But he's just an impressive hitter in one of baseball's best lineups. His average stat line over those three seasons, before last year, was a .286 average with 99 runs, 99 ribbies, and 36 home runs. And so I just feel like if everybody's healthy and everything's clicking and he's in the middle of all that, I think the Matt Olson year that we saw a couple years ago with the massive runs in RBI could be like a Riley thing. So it might be a little bit of wishful thinking. I'm kind of, over projecting perhaps, but I don't know. For, he doesn't get stolen bases. I understand that, but I don't know. I seem to like Austin Riley a lot this year.
Yeah. Well, I can't argue with you. I would put Riley at the top of that list. So I'm in complete agreement with you. And Machado is just so consistent. I think you know what you're getting with him. Olson, took a step back last year, but he's also just such a great source of power. And if the Braves, they get Acuna back and, stay healthy, he's going to be in line for a big year. The only one who scares me a little bit is Devers. I'm a little nervous with the shoulders. It seems like a recurring thing that he has been bothering him for a while that has not been fixed by surgery as far as I can recall. So just a little trepidation with him.
Yeah. We mentioned it before, but like I have a lot of trepidation. There are just too many good players around this range where I'm just not going to draft them. There are pitchers that I'm going to take. Wyatt Langford goes around this range if you're into that sort of thing. It's just somebody I'm not really into. Machado, obviously really solid. But again, it's always the opportunity cost. Like, what are you giving up to get one of those guys? And then you also have to be thinking about, stolen bases as well.
Yeah.
The next tier is a big one. It's a kind of a value tier. It is essentially guys that are going between... Well, there's one outlier here. There's Pete Alonso, but I group him in this group. Someone might think differently, but guys between 60, which is the end of the fourth round in 15 teamers, end of the fifth and 12s, between 60 and like 100, 110. So that middle round range, but there's a lot of them. And the first basemen are, it's obviously Pete Alonso, Christian Walker, Josh Naylor, Cody Bellinger, who's also an outfielder, and then Vinny Pascantino. He's near the bottom of that in ADP. And on the third base side, it's Mark Vientos, it's Junior Caminero, and then Jordan Westberg, who gets second and third eligibility. How do you navigate between this group, this tier, and do you like this tier in general?
Yeah, I think it's a really good tier. Very a lot of choices, a lot of different statistical profiles. I honestly, right now, I would probably put Alonso at the top of it, at least for me, going back to New York. I think he's comfortable there. I think he's, going to be very motivated with his contract situation to have a big year. And I love the idea of him hitting right behind Lindor and Soto and in front of, and with Vientos providing him protection. So I think he could be in line for a surprisingly good year. I mean, he is kind of mostly a three-category guy, but I think he can hit for a decent average. And those three categories can be elite as opposed to very good. Yeah, Vientos and Caminero are both exciting options at third base. I like both of them. I can see both of them creeping up. At least, certainly Caminero, I think, has really moved up the last couple of rounds. In terms of the first baseman, I do have Walker ahead of the others, of Naylor, Bellinger, Pasquantino, and some of the ones in the next tier. I really like Houston as a landing spot for him. Yeah, that's how I kind of see it. The frustrating thing for me is I really like Westberg a lot, and I think he was breaking out last year before he got hurt. But I just haven't been getting to him just because there's so many guys in this range that are really good, and plus, you know, you need to get pitching and stuff. So I haven't gotten there, but he's one guy I'd like to have a piece of in a big league.
You know what's great is in the competition of playing in DCs on NFBC, and especially the 400 DCs, people call them the 400s, is the level of competition there is so high, and all the things that we are looking at that, you know, data we didn't look at before or care about really can help swing things. And so I think looking at batted ball data, looking at like power metrics and things like that, you know, the things I usually look at would be, you know, the hard hit rate, the average exit velocity, barrel rate, you know, look at isolated power. And I kind of see the more sharper players, like, you know, that information will kind of lead them to draft someone over ahead of their ADP versus under. And so Jordan Westberg has been holding value there in the 90s, 100s. And, you know, last year, he got hurt in July. At the end of July, broke his hand. But before that, man, it was a 46% hard hit rate, a 12% barrel rate, a 91 mile per hour exit velocity, which are all, you know, above average numbers. Where is he going to hit? And if you go to in that lineup, right, is he going to hit sixth? That's what it seems like. Maybe he'll hit higher. But the other thing I notice is every other, plate appearances, if you look at any projection system, are like all under 600. But who's to say that he won't get 600 plus at plate appearances?
Yeah, I know. I mean, the Orioles have a lot of bodies, a lot of mouths to feed, but something's wrong if Westberg's not playing every day, I think. But I'll also say what I think of when I look at this tier is, you know, you and I both love auctions, and I think this is a great example why, because in a snake draft, you know, we're trying to fill our starting pitching. We need to get a first or second reliever in a DC, and it's really tough to kind of get more than one out of this tier. But in an auction, you know, if you're willing to bypass some of the higher priced guys, you could really make hay in this tier. And that's one of the beauties of auctions.
And one side note with this, if you're an FTN subscriber, you're looking at these tier articles, the really tough part about it is because I'm doing a tier a week and it literally takes me several days to write an article. Like, you know, if you're looking at the corner infield tiers articles from 2 weeks ago, there's already some outdated stuff in there because, you know, the market starts moving, and even more so now in spring training. So I try to put notes in there where I can. So already where I think I had Pete Alonso two rounds under ADP, now he's moved up. So yeah, kind of moved him up a little bit there. So I'm always constantly tweaking, adjusting. I'll try to put the notes in where I can, but just remember that information is not static. If you go to our rankings and our projections, you'll kind of get a better idea of it. What about my boy? I'm just really, really a fan of him. And actually, I wish he would tweet and kind of talk less, because I think like the more mystery, the better. But Vinny Pasquantino, Italian breakfast. I really like this Kansas City lineup. Am I crazy?
No, you're not crazy. I mean, anytime you have a chance to regularly hit behind Witt, it's a very good lineup spot. I do think the home field suppresses his power a little bit, but I can see him being a 280 type hitter, which distinguishes him from a lot of the other first basemen that are going around him. And so if you're maybe willing to, you know, if you're strong in power, you may be willing to give up 5 homers or maybe even 10 homers, you can get a much better average. And he has a chance to, you know, hit triple digits in RBIs, hitting behind Witt. So I definitely like him. He's not going to lead this group in homers, but he might lead this group in average. And that's critically important.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Going into the next tier with you got guys like we mentioned, Tristan Casas, Royce Lewis, Jake Berger. Who else we got? Luis Renjifo, Alex Bregman. Bregman, we said we moved up. Matt Chapman. And I think that's kind of the tier there. If you're dipping a little bit down below, it's Paul Goldschmidt, Michael Toglia. Who are the standouts to you? Who are the guys you're looking to potentially fade?
I guess one of the guys I like is Chapman. I think he had a really good year in San Francisco last year. He got his extension. I think he's going to be hitting in the middle of that lineup. Maybe it's a little better with Adames there. And out of nowhere, he started running last year, which was one of the bigger surprises. And, you know, if he can keep that up, that's a distinguishing characteristic for him. I like the consistency of Berger in that Texas lineup. It's going to be the best lineup he's had a chance to hit in for his career. And I think he's going to benefit from that. Royce Lewis the price has gotten a lot more reasonable, but I'm having trouble getting there with him. I'm not sure what he is anymore. I know he has tremendous skill and he has really nice power, but the injuries are really tough to stomach. It's really tough. You lose your third baseman in a 15-team league during the season. They're not easy to replace in Fab. And last year he just stopped running. So I'm not, if he's not going to run at all, it may be difficult. And Casas is a big enigma to me. At times it doesn't even sound like the Red Sox want him, like that they're very open to trading him. And he couldn't get back on the field last year. And when he did, he was kind of ordinary. But, you could also, it's not difficult to envision him, if he can stay healthy, possibly hitting fourth or fifth in that lineup and just having a monster season.
Yeah, and then, Royce Lewis also does slightly concern me, and he just keeps falling down ADP. I feel like a lot of people we're going to want to see him, and he might tease us a little bit again if he's looking good, but just every year there's some sort of lower body injury. It's concerning. Jake Berger, he's probably going to be hitting, in the bottom third of that lineup, but obviously the amazing power. Hitting 250 every single season, just like literally on the dot. Yes. But that's a good lineup. That's going to be a lot of home runs there for sure.
Yeah. And I'll just one last thought on that tier, not to prolong things, but Luis Renjifo, if he's healthy and a regular starter, maybe, hitting high up in that order, he was having a very good season last year before he got hurt and he was running wild. With Ron Washington there, he could be an interesting speed play from a corner infielder.
Yeah, I do like Renjifo a lot, and especially if everyone's just clicking there, if like for some magical way, reason, Mike Trout stays healthy, Jorge Soler starts mashing, maybe Joe Odell gets going, Renjifo there, and all the position eligibility he gets is really nice. It is interesting to note that his sprint speed is not that great. It's more around league average, and so it's surprising that he stole so many bases and was on pace for 40. But listen, if someone's smart and knows how to run, that's obviously a benefit, and Ron Washington's always going to have a green light on for them.
Yeah, and for the folks listening at home, if you want a surprise, go check out the sprint speed for Kyle Tucker. It is not pretty. You'll see a lot of catchers before you get to him, but he's still stealing 25, 30 bases a year.
Paul Goldschmidt, he's just, you know, he's one of your boys now. He's on the Yankees. My feeling on him is that he's just been kind of mired in that, you know, in the doldrums of St. Louis, and just seems like an organization that doesn't really care. And now I feel like, you know, we've seen it before. We saw a few years ago with Goldie where he just had an off year, and then he was the number two hitter behind Aaron Judge. And granted, it's been a few years. He's older and all, but I just feel like he's going to wake up a little bit. Am I starting to sound too bullish on like too many players here? But I don't know. I like Goldie in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, no, I kind of do too. I mean, he had a horrific first half last year, but he actually was pretty solid in the second half. He's getting a big park upgrade. He's getting a big lineup upgrade. The tension for me with him is I'm trying to avoid very old players. I mean, I think the game is getting younger. But on the other hand, you know, right now he's probably projected to hit cleanup behind Judge. And yeah, if he's got anything left in the tank, he could be primed for, you know, pretty strong season. Certainly there's profit to be made at his draft price. I'll say that. I'm not expecting, you know, MVP consideration or anything like that, but for where he's going, you can certainly paint a picture of him providing a profit on that price.
Let me ask you, for the price, we have three Yankee corner infield eligible guys: Paul Goldschmidt around 150, Bellinger around 100-110, and Chisholm around 25-30. What is your ranking of like at the price, would you say?
Oh boy. I'd probably say Goldschmidt, Chisholm, Bellinger.
Yes.
I don't fully trust Bellinger. I mean, you know, he's been great some years, but he's been horrific for several years as well. I can see Goldie, you know, thriving in New York. Bellinger, I guess we'll see how he takes to New York. It's a different environment. I mean, he's played for the Dodgers, so he's used to, you know, the lights, but it's a little different in New York, I think. I'm also not sure the Yankees, you know, Chisholm will run, Volpe will run. I'm not sure how much Boone is going to want Bellinger to run, which is, you know, a decent part of his value. So, yeah, I mean, Chisholm would be my favorite of those players, obviously, but when you factor in the cost, I think Goldie might be a slightly better value.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to, well, first of all, it's kind of mind-blowing to remember, and I was there for it and was heavily invested the year where he won the MVP. He hit 47 home runs that season.
Yeah.
And just a year prior, we were watching him at First Pitch Arizona. And then he had that year again, not this past season, but in 2023, I believe, with the Cubs, just out of nowhere, crazy profit for people where everyone was out. And he ended up going 307 with 95, 97, and then 26 homers, 20 stolen bases. So we'll see what the Yankees, you know, can do with these guys. I mean, this could be a you know, all-timer type season.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, Dodger Stadium is pretty favorable, but once he gets a look at the short right field porch in Yankee Stadium, he will fall in love. I guess my problem is, you know, you look at, you know, the MVP year 2019, and you look at his averages, and it's 305, 239, 165, 210, 307, 266. I mean, good luck projecting, you know, him with accuracy.
Yeah, yeah. And then sticking to this tier, we're looking at five here still with tier four. Any love whatsoever, or is it a lineup specific build with Colorado Rockies surprising standout last year, Michael Toglia?
I go back and forth on him. I think I maybe prioritize average more than others, and so he is a tough pick for me. I mean, I think the power is legitimate. It's backed up by all the StatCast data. I mean, he has 30 to 40 home run power, and he's playing in, you know, such a great park. But, you know, that he has, you know, the power is real, but so are the contact issues. I mean, the last 2 years, it's been a 32-33% strikeout rate. You know, hitting in the best park in the majors last year and playing, you know, in 458 plate appearances, he still hit 218. So he's tough for me. I think he'd be easier in an auction, at least if, like, you know, if you can tell early on that you're going to get him, and then you can kind of build around him. But it's tough. I think in a snake, he's just potentially tanking your average, and I'm not sure the power is worth it.
And so I know we're both on the same page with we like Kyle Schwarber for the price, like, you know, how the whole utility thing only thing has been really it's gone back to the David Ortiz days when he was always a value, and with Nelson Cruz, it's just been a thing. And so, you know, we talked about, you and I before offline, liking Kyle Schwarber, but I might be answering my own question here, but if you have Kyle Schwarber on your team, you're not even looking, you're not even sniffing Michael Toglia's way. Yeah.
No, not at all. No, I don't, you know, there's so few big average anchors like Arias or Vladdy or something that it's really tough to take two big average drains in the same lineup, especially, you know, before you even draft a catcher who, you know, there's only a few catches that will help your average. So I think it's tough to do more than one.
And you're also not, I'm guessing, you know, it used to be a thing. I feel like many years ago, we were less experienced. It was like, oh, you get a Schwarber and it balances out with like an Arias, right? But it's not always the best way to go, because if one of those guys get hurt, your balance is off immediately. It's almost better to get the middle of the road guys.
Yeah, without doubt. I guess one of the things that I look at is if I'm going to potentially sacrifice average, I would rather do it for a guy like Kyle Schwarber leading off for a really good team with a track record of 100 runs, 100 ribbies, 35-40 homers.
So first of all, you know, listen, I'm not parading in anyone else's pain, but my poster boy for negative, you know, Delta, Spencer Steer, who I've had like four, you know, 50 picks past his ADP. I don't want to say justified because it's that messed up to say, but, you know, he's dealing with, they're already talking about possibly platooning him. I don't know why, because he's not really, you know, can hit both sides, but now dealing with like a sore shoulder. So I feel like he's going to slip a little bit, but these are some other interesting guys here. You got Eugenio Suarez, who had the massive second half last year, one of the most productive players in fantasy. You got Isak Paredes, who might slot in there between Altuve and Yordan Alvarez in Houston. You got perennially underrated Alec Baum, because he does not hit many homers. And then Yandy Diaz, a guy that I just have a personal favorable bias towards. So that's another interesting tier if you missed the guys before that.
Yeah, no, and I think Steer mostly has been drafted in the along with the prior tier, but I think your placement is right. It's disconcerting to hear that he's having shoulder issues when he, you know, he kind of had them, battled them late last season, and after, you know, a full off season, he's not better. So that's a little disconcerting. Paredes, I think, is really primed for a better year in Houston. I think that park fits him well. And yeah, both Bowman and Yandy Diaz, I think, are notoriously underrated. Yandy gives you that great average and should be, you know, could be very good in runs with that lineup. And Suarez, I'll just fall on my sword, was probably my single worst drop of last season. And I'm supposed to be the drops guy at FBN with my weekly article, but he was so horrific in the first half last year that I must fess up that I did drop him in a league and definitely regretted it.
Yeah, but you probably won that league anyways, Mike.
not that one.
You know what? I was right there with you. I had no interest in him in the preseason, and I wasn't really buying it. But yeah, I guess there was just a, you know, a couple of days. Yeah, I mean, that was really hard to explain. There was just magic in the air with the Diamondbacks last year, because they scored more runs than any other team in baseball. So I don't know. I'm still not drafting him though this year.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm probably not.
All right, let's we'll wrap this up here. These last couple tiers, just any guys that stand out to you. So these are guys going around 200 to 250 in average draft position on NFBC. You've got first baseman like Ryan Mountcastle, Michael Bush, and Nathaniel Lowe, who is now a member of the Washington Nationals, and then third baseman Josh Jung, Nolan Arenado, who might be staying in St. Louis. We'll see. And then rookie Matt Shaw, who hopefully doesn't get birdied.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting tier. I mean, you can see upside with many of them, but certainly a lot of uncertainty too. I'd kind of like to see what Josh Jung will do in a full season for the Rangers. He's had some horrible injury luck with hit by pitches. I definitely like Mountcastle with the fences coming in. And I wouldn't, you know, get, for the price, I wouldn't sleep on Mikel Garcia if you're, you know, looking for late speed. He should play and he should run. So it's there's plenty of speed, but at some point, you know, you get later in the draft, and if you're behind, he could be a good rescue for you.
Yeah, and I do like this tier. I'll also mention that after I haven't really touched Nolan Arenado in a draft since his Colorado days, and I'm interested. I mean, well, I was more interested when I thought he was going somewhere else,
right?
But yeah, he's like 32, 33. He's got a little bit more left in the tank, and so I don't mind him. I do like Ryan Mountcastle. I like those first basemen just in that group. Like if I miss and I need, if I just need some like all around consistency and don't really need the power, then Nathaniel Lowe, I think, is a good pick. If I can stomach the batting average and, you know, just want, you know, somebody middle of the lineup power bat, I think Michael Bush maybe has another level to attain, because, I mean, it doesn't look like he's going to be platooned. And listen, you've got Seiya Suzuki, who is going to pretty much just DH, and then you added Kyle Tucker. Apparently, Nico Horner's healthy and fine. Dansby Swanson, your boy. I mean, it's a pretty good lineup.
Yeah, no, I could see the Cubs being a much more dangerous team, and you don't have to squint hard to see Bush hitting 30 home runs. But maybe the average will be lacking. Yeah, no, it's and even, you know, you mentioned Nathaniel Lowe, and I agree, he's probably sacrificing some power with him, but Washington has a sneaky, interesting lineup, don't they?
They do. And even somebody like Josh Bell, in, you know, who I wouldn't even touch. I mean, he's, you know, back there now. So it's a very young team, and I think I believe Nathaniel Lowe's like almost 30, and then Bell's, you know, obviously over 30, but that's it. Like everyone else is like a super young team, you know, or on that offense. Ahmed Rosario, I think, but you know, he's a platoon guy, but it's a very, you know, mix of young and old and not too much in between. But Nathaniel Lowe, again, for a corner, you're getting what he's hit the last couple of years, 16, 17, 18 home runs. That one season he had in 2022 was a pretty big outlier. He hit 302 with 27 homers. I mean, nobody's expecting that, but I think he might be pretty solid with the runs in the RBI.
Yes, exactly. And what's interesting with him too is in 21 he somehow stole 8 bases, which he hasn't broken 2 since then. But Washington, I think, runs more than any other team in the league. So. Not that I'm expecting a big stolen base breakout from him, but if he got 5 to 10, it would be more than most people expect.
Let me ask you, this is a random trivia question. Obviously, you can look it up. I wouldn't be able to know. Who is the youngest Dodgers in the Dodger in their projected starting lineup? How old do you think he is? Like not counting Andy, like excluding Andy Paez.
Oh my goodness. And Hyesung Kim too, I guess.
Yeah, that's correct. No, including him. No, you're right. That's the answer. He's 26. Okay. Yeah. And let me tell you this. This is a crazy stat. Everyone on their team is between 32 and 37 years old. Like literally everyone on the offense, except for Kim, Pius if he makes it. And then both Edmund and Will Smith will be turning 30 in the middle of the season. So everyone, it's just like a very mature team.
Yeah, I would have guessed Will Smith next. I didn't realize he was already closing in on 30.
Man, life comes at you fast. Speaking of fast, these last couple tiers here in the 250 to 300 overall range, you've got the multi-excellent position eligible Willie Castro, just excellent as far as his position eligibility, that is. First baseman, Christian Encarnacion Strand, Andrew Vaughn, the prize of the White Sox once Luis Robert Jr. is out of there. And then you've got Tyler Soderstrom in Sacramento, Nolan Schenwell, former first-round pick of the Angels there, Max Muncy, Connor Norby, Joey Ortiz, Ryan McCann, Candelario, first third, and then Matt Vierling. Those are your third basemen. And then Chris Morel and Jake Cronenworth have the CIMI mix. So that's another tier. I mean, just a lot of value. When people say, oh, you know, first base, you know, sucks, I see a lot of first basemen.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think there's a real step down here, but there's some really interesting players. I mean, I think Vaughn can, on a skill level, probably belongs in the tier above, but just the team is so bad. Norby, I think, is interesting in that he'll hit probably high in the order, maybe second or third for Miami, and can give a little speed. He strikes me like an accumulator. The one guy I'm having trouble with, and I'm kind of curious what your take on him is CES. You know, is this a case where, you know, he didn't live up to the prospect hype last year, but he was battling injuries, and now everyone's just sleeping on him? He went in the first, I don't know what, 8-9 rounds last year, and now he's available much, much later in drafts. Are we just missing an opportunity, or is he not, you know, possibly not even starting for Cincinnati?
I think with Christian Encarnacion Strand, there are a wide range of possibilities with him. You know, he's 25. Were it not for the wrist injury, we'd be talking completely different about him. I've noticed that because the draft market, the NFBC market, is very, I think, roster projection sensitive. I believe it was when Gavin Lux joined the team, Encarnacion went to from starting lineup, full time to like bench, short side platoon guy, and I think that impacted his price. But you know, there was a note 2 days ago about him possibly getting a little work at third base. The Reds have they got a lot of moving parts there. I don't know what that says for Noel Marte, but you know, Gavin Lux can play all kinds of positions. Candelario can play there. It does maybe seem like maybe Spencer Steer might start on the IL to start the season. Who knows? But Encarnacion was ready to come back, but then the wrist wasn't fully healed, and then it just hasn't been in a good place. And wrist injury is obviously not great for power. Right. But I'm hoping. I'm definitely, I'm buying around the price where it is now.
Yeah, I mean, I think in looking at this tier, if you have to pick one guy who could be in a much higher tier next year, I think it would have to be him.
Yeah, that's right. I feel like, you know, I think like a guy like Tyler Soderstrom, unfortunate no catcher eligibility anymore, we'd be talking a much higher ADP. I mean, especially in Sacramento, it's going to be so hot there this summer. Half the games there in that minor league park. I mean, you're looking at a guy that if he doesn't get stuck in, too much of a platoon or really stink, I mean, this is a 30 home run bat. I think the batting average won't be good. But you kind of know what you're getting there. I don't think there's like massive amount of profit there. Andrew Vaughn, same thing. Like you said, if he probably belongs a tier above, were he on any other team. But unfortunately, it just sucks. You're on the White Sox. You're going to be, you know, your counting categories are going to be down, you know. Yeah, I'm interested in Norby, Connor Norby, third baseman. And Joey Ortiz, by the way, worth mentioning, is going to play shortstop for the Brewers, so he's going to gain that eligibility too.
Yeah, no, he's a sneaky pickup there. I mean, he went, you know, double-digit homers and steals, you know, low double digits, but he could be useful late in the draft.
We'll wrap things up here with guys that are that basically they have an ADP of beyond 300. This is Mike Mager, Vlad Sedler, FTN Fantasy, wrapping things up with this tier. So I have Reese Hoskins a little bit out of it, but other than that, these guys are kind of similar, not all that exciting. You got Hoskins, Luke Raley Jr. At first base, along with Jonathan Aranda, promised more playing time in Tampa Bay, Josh Bell, and then Carlos Santana back in the mix, now staying in the AL Central. At the third base side, you know, we mentioned Noel V. Marte, who knows what the heck's going on with him. Jose Miranda, I wanted to ask you if you think Ty France being there is going to impact his playing time at all. And then Ke'Bryan Hayes, who maybe has something left because I feel like he's been sort of left for dead.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know about Hayes. I think I haven't seen him stay healthy yet. And I think I need to see that before I'd be willing to invest. I don't know if, you know, I guess between Jose Miranda and Ty France, I think I would rather just sit that out and stay away from both of them. I like Bell of this group. You know, he should be hitting fourth or fifth in the Nationals lineup with some good hitters in front of him. And I think he's nothing flashy, but I think he can, you know, put up solid numbers there and potentially have everyday playing time, which is more than some of these folks have. I mean, if you're looking for upside, I think Aranda's interesting. He should be strong side platoon guy. He's not going to hit against lefties, but in that
Jonathan Aranda?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they'll be playing in Steinbrenner Field with the similar short right field porch, so his power could play up. And, you know, I know it's boring and I know he's old, but Carlos Santana is a very durable player, and you know, I could see him possibly hitting cleanup behind J-Ram. And if he does, he's gonna have a chance to drive in a decent amount of runs. So, you know, these are not guys I'm hunting out, but you know, if you need a very late corner, you can kind of see it. And then I'd say Noel V. Marte is a little bit like CES in that, you know, it wasn't that long ago we were drafting him much, much higher. And then he got the PED suspension and came back and was horrible. But there was a reason he was a high prospect. And with a fresh start, you know, he at least has some upside, although it's tough to stash him if he's not making the opening day roster.
Well, hopefully PEDs wasn't the reason he was a high prospect.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's true too. Yes. Good point.
Yeah. I mean, in that kind of stuff. So one of the things I love to do is, yeah, I try to stay active and chatty with everyone in the community, but you know, we have friends that are kind of specialists of their own team. So I do love to check in with friends. Obviously, you know, Jeff Erickson, friend of the pods, host of the RotoWire pod. He knows his Reds pretty well, so I usually like to check in there with about you know, about some of those guys. And yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Nobody really knows, so we'll see in camp how it breaks down. Let's end things here with the utility only players. There are not all that many of them this year, but we're, you know, obviously you got Shohei Ohtani all the way at the top, and then you know, the three-headed monster with Marcell Ozuna, Kyle Schwarber, and you know, Brent Rooker in the mix. So just kind of starting with those four, to ask you, if you had the number one, would you take Ohtani? Is that your guy? And then how do you feel about the you know, Ozuna and Rooker in relation to Schwarber?
Yeah, right now, if he's still healthy, I have Ohtani a little bit ahead of Witt, and so Ohtani would be my guy. Schwarber, Ozuna, and Rooker, I honestly like all three. I mean, it's a little disappointing that you'd kind of like a bigger discount, but I think they're just so good coming off such strong seasons that there's not as big of a discount for the UT-only players as you would like, at least among those three. But I have shares of all three in draft champions leagues. I think they're all good enough to draft and are good enough to, you know, get beyond the UT only designation.
Yeah, and I mean, none of them are going to earn anything, right, this year? Like, is it eligibility?
No, unless I guess the only one, maybe Rooker, or I suppose Schwarber has a possibility. I read something recently that they might want to try to give JT Realmuto some time as a DH and throw Schwarber in the outfield occasionally. But if it's only periodic, then, you know, he's not gaining it anytime soon. And I don't see Rooker gaining outfield eligibility unless there's an injury to their current outfield. Probably.
That's funny. You started talking about rest day for JT Realmuto, and I remembered that Kyle Schwarber came up in with the Cubs as a catcher. So I thought you were going to say he's going to go behind the plate.
Yeah, no, I think those days are over.
The last few guys here. I mean, you know, real quick. I do like all three. I do see myself clicking on Schwarber mostly because he's the one guy that seems to fall past the other two, you know, just kind of because of the batting average concern. And then you've got like a 200, 240 pick drop to the next utility guys. But it's Giancarlo Stanton and then Jock Peterson. And, you know, we know what Stanton is. And with Jock Peterson, he had an incredible year last year with Arizona. He goes to Texas. And, I mean, sounds to me like, you know, business as usual. He will just play against righties, his left-handed bat, power bat, and, you know, will probably hit in the middle of the lineup when he does play.
Yeah, no, I think if you haven't already filled your UT position and you can get these guys very late in the draft, I think Stanton and Peterson are both worth clicking on. Stanton had a tremendous playoffs. It looks like you know, he looked like he was his old self again. Whether that will still be the case when games start in late March remains to be seen. But, you know, a lot of teams, a lot of fantasy managers struggled to get there in power last year. And so if you're drafting a team and you're, you know, feel like you're a little power light as you get into, you know, pick 300 and beyond, Stanton is a, you know, good option, I think. And he's the type of guy where I think, you know, if he's healthy, he's going to be playing virtually every day and his average may hurt, but he should provide homers and RBIs. And if he gets hurt, I think at his cost is easy enough to just drop him and move on. Peterson, you know, there may be some frustrating, you know, scoring periods where you don't know whether to start him or play him if there's, they're facing a lefty one day and stuff, but he was, you know, had a fantastic season, as you said, and hitting in the middle of the Texas lineup after round 20, I think he's certainly in play.
The last guy we'll mention is Kyle Manzardo, who is as post-hype sleepery as it gets. This time last year, a bunch of us, not this time last year, but in a year and a half ago, we were in First Pitch Arizona watching Kyle Manzardo mash bombs in the Fall Stars home run derby. And it was just a disappointing rookie season for him, kind of, you know, inconsistent playing time, mired in a platoon, didn't have the best minor league year. And so now some people are questioning him in general. If you're looking at projected lineups, it looks like he, you know, was pretty much going to DH. I'm guessing he might get first base eligibility at some point, but, you know, Roster Resource has him second in, you know, against right-handed hitters between Stephen Kwan and Jose Ramirez. That would be a good spot, but there's not a lot of movement in the market. It feels like everyone's essentially bearish on Kyle Manzardo.
Yeah. And I'm not totally sure why, unless, you know, there's just a lot of teams just you know, he's not worth kind of clogging the UT spot for. But I thought he started hitting late in the year after a slow start. He started improving, and it's a good lineup position. And, you know, I confess I don't know how good he is with the glove, but if he's, you know, going to be a long-term player for the Guardians, you would think they would want to get him experience at first base rather than rolling Carlos Santana out there and kind of forcing Manzardo to DH every day. So, you know, I can see a path where he gets first base eligibility. I don't think he's a bad gamble at his price by any means.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, that's a great example of us, you know, sometimes using common sense, not to say that, you know, there isn't common sense in here, and a lot of it is, you know, sort of news-based and wise assumptions. But yeah, that just to me makes a lot of sense. There would be no reason why Manzardo shouldn't get first base at some point, April, you know, maybe May at the latest. And then, you know, Carlos Santana can also DH, and he's going to get some off days. He's 39. Are there any players, as we wrap things up, the final question, anyone that we've missed that you want to touch on, or any final words about the tiers or just anything in general?
Well, let me just say one last word on the last guy in the UT only tier, Yoshida. So right now he's tough to click on because the Red Sox don't want him, and it's tough to see where the playing time is going to come from as they add Bregman and others. And at best he would be a platoon, but if they do trade him somewhere, and I'm not sure where he would go, I mean, he's a pretty good hitter. I mean, he lacks power, but he's a pretty good average bat. I mean, he did okay as a hitter. And for him to be, you know, an ADP over 400, I don't know. You know, I think sometimes if you're that late in a draft right now, he wouldn't be a bad pick, and just see, is he traded into a better situation? Does something open up his playing time? You could get a real bargain there. And if not, and they're not playing him regularly, then you could just drop him.
Yeah, I'm with it. And I've drafted some Yoshida as well. And even assuming, I mean, we all know that he's off to, had the off season surgery. I believe it was a surgery, but I'm now starting to confuse it, but I know that he's behind and might even start the season off on the IL, like just as he's recovering, but it doesn't matter. Like he's still, if you're like, you know, getting a guy like that at 500 overall, there aren't many players that, you know, he will gain outfield eligibility most likely. And I mean, 280 hitters these days don't grow on trees, and he's one of them. So I think that's an absolutely great play.
Yeah, at that point in a DC, when you have a large, especially in a DC where you have a large bench, it's not a big deal to stash him for, you know, a few weeks or a month.
Well, Mike, thank you so much. Apologies taking you a half an hour over or a lot of time here, but there was a lot to cover. So thank you for coming on, and definitely not the last time, even this preseason.
Yeah, my pleasure, Matt. Always a pleasure to chat with you, and love talking baseball. And it won't be too long before we see each other in Vegas. Looking forward to it.
That's right. We'll be here in a jiffy. In the meanwhile, we've got lots of episodes to come, all these tier previews. We'll talk to you next week. On behalf of Jason Anthony and everybody at FTN Fantasy, this is Mike Mager. I'm Vlad Sedler, and it's the FTN Fantasy Baseball Podcast. We'll talk to you next week.